In this session, Chen Yan is talking to us about the state of the acupuncture market. With all of these acupuncture schools closing, is there still interest in people getting acupuncture? Is dry needling going to put us all out of business? And should you have a specialty or can you be a general practitioner? And then Chen walks us through her checklist of what you should be focusing on in the various stages of your practice. When it comes to starting a business, a lot of people focus on the wrong things, so it's important to focus on the right things as you grow through each stage. Chen Yan is the founder of Introverted Visionary, where she helps holistic health practitioners scale their business sustainably to 6 or 7 figures. Chen Yan, thanks for being here.
Yeah, good to be here today.
Great. So, what we're talking about today is, you said you have a sort of a checklist for people at the various stages of their practice. And I'm really excited to get into that. I've been watching a lot of Alex Hormozi lately, and he has this thing where he's like, what you should focus on each stage of your business. So I'm kind of curious to see how that, if we can have something like that that applies specifically to acupuncture. But before we get into that, I did want to ask you a few things just about the general state of the market, about having an acupuncture practice, and things people have been thinking about and asking me about. First of all is, it seems like recently a lot of schools have been closing, and a lot of people are really concerned about that and what that means for the state of acupuncture in America. But as far as I know, it seems like, yes, schools are closing and enrollment is down, but is there a corresponding trend in terms of the interest in acupuncture from a patient perspective? Like, just because there aren't as many people studying acupuncture, are there fewer people interested in getting acupuncture? Is that something we need to worry about?
Yeah, so I think that it is good to talk about this issue with the schools closing and everything. And then let's talk about is this really also what patients are experiencing on their end? Is there less of a demand and what's going on there? And, you know, with the acupuncture schools closing, there are three main reasons. Like, one is that enrollment has been down since COVID and it hasn't really picked up. OCOM actually had a 50% decrease in over a period of four years. Which led to the closure. And interestingly, like, there's actually been a, like, Google Trends has looked at over a period of time frame in terms of how people are searching for acupuncture schools and trainings. I found this really interesting that there's actually been a decline in the searches of people looking up like acupuncture education, you know, school and that kind of thing. So there might be less interest in going to school for acupuncture. Second thing is that the school expenses are higher, and now because of the inflation as well. And then the third reason why acupuncture schools are closing is that there is this like gainful employment thing that the federal government announced in 2023, and then they ended up like planning on implementing it starting in 2024. So basically, like, the people who can't really show that there is a good, like, you know, kind of like income to debt ratio kind of thing after graduation, then if that's the case, then the government, it's going to be harder for schools to actually receive financial aid. And so, like, for acupuncture profession, comparatively to other professions, you know, in terms of being able to make a higher than expected kind of like what you'd expect of salary wise, like, acupuncture was falling behind in that. And so then the schools are unable to get financial aid very well. And, you know, it's interesting because, for example, you look at the chiropractic profession, because they're still subject to this, right?
Yeah.
But they don't have this kind of a problem as much. And why is that? It's like they, as a profession, they tend to be more, it's a part of a natural part of the idea after you graduate that you will just learn about business training and get practice management help. Like, it's part of the culture. And so, like, if you look at, for example, the chiropractic profession versus acupuncture profession, they don't have that kind of a thing, even though they also still have, you know, pretty decent sized student loan debts. So when they graduate, but acupuncture seem to lag in the way of the money they are able to make, like, soon after graduating compared to, you know, other professions. And so,
Yeah. So that was something I was going to ask is like, if it's about this ratio between post-graduation income and debt incurred during school, does that mean that just that the schools are charging too much and that's the problem is people are accumulating too much debt? Or is it that acupuncturists aren't making enough money? And is that a reason not to become an acupuncturist, I guess, if they're not making enough money?
Yeah, I think it could probably be like a mix of both is what I'm imagining with that. And the thing about it is that like it's something that being able to grow a practice successfully is a learned skill. It's not something that like everyone is really capable of it. Like if you can go to acupuncture school, I remember, so I'm a pharmacist originally by training, but I actually ended up deciding to ask where I got my doctorate of pharmacy degree from to do a Chinese medicine, like herbal rotation at the Bastyr University, instead of actually doing my rotation at a typical pharmacy. And so I remember like going through TCM books, textbooks, and I looked at it, I was like, wow, how do you guys study this stuff? You know, what I'm trying to say is like, you guys are smart, you know, to be able to study that and you have the capability. It's just a matter of, they don't teach us stuff at school. And then all of a sudden you're out and you're wondering like, what do I do to grow the practice? And it's not because of not being capable, it's just because it's never been something that has been paid attention to before, or the importance hasn't been placed on it, right? So I think it's important to have that kind of a mindset shift of how, unless you're planning on working for someone else, that it is important to pay attention to this, and whether it is during school or after, like shortly after, and not wait till, oh, let me see how this happens. Because I think I often see this where it's like, oh, I think, you know, when I open, then people would just come to me. And then.
Yeah, I definitely had that.
Yeah. And then comes opening time. Yeah. And then you end up getting discouraged, and then it's like a more of a downward spiral instead of like an upward spiral of, oh, okay, so I just make this move and then I end up attracting patients and then make this move and I'm growing like that. Then you're in an upward spiral, right? So I think that's an issue. Now back to your question about is there a demand still? So there definitely is still a demand, and the more people are seeking integrative options and holistic options than ever before. I was just looking up some stats with this too. And in terms of, let's see. So for example, there were, according to the National Health Interview Survey, the percentage of adults in the US who use acupuncture in the past 12 months, it doubles from 1% in 2002 to 2.2% in 2022. So that's like over 7.3 million adult patients. And then the use of acupuncture for pain management increased from 55% in 2002 to 72% in 2022. So there's still an upward trend and interest in this, right? And then also there's in the US, the acupuncture industry, it's experienced steady growth. And so it's had a compound annual growth rate of 6.5% over recent years. And then by 2024, which is this year, the industry revenues expected to reach like $707.5 million. And that's a 1.9% gain in last year alone, right? So it's still in a growth mode. It's not like it's declining. So then it's just, what does this mean as acupuncturists? It would be that, for one, if schools are graduating less people because there are less schools out there, then this is an opportunity for you to be able to actually set yourself apart so that people come to you and want to see you, because there is a demand. It's not an acupuncture less in demand problem. It's a marketing problem. It's people understanding and then knowing that you're there and wanting to come see you problem.
Because I think I heard somebody say something similar to this on a podcast. It was a lawyer saying that, like, oh yeah, I went to law school and they taught me how to be a lawyer, but they didn't teach me how to run a law practice. And I feel like that's kind of the I had this, I identified that with going to acupuncture school. And I think maybe it's different because, like, if you go into law, there's a different career path where you can go work for someone else and become a partner and kind of learn the ropes that way. But that's not really the case with a lot of acupuncturists. A lot of acupuncturists graduate and immediately open their own practice. But so it sounds like we still have reason to be optimistic. Even though the schools are closing, it's like the money is still there. There's still demand. It's just more of an issue of acupuncturists don't know how to harness it, like harness that demand and bring in the money, but it is still there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's the good news.
And I guess this is maybe kind of a weird take on it, but when the schools started closing, it was like, oh, this might be a good thing. It means there's less competition than before. True. Like, I remember when I started in San Diego, I was like, just when I went on Yelp and looked up acupuncturists in Hillcrest, there were like 50 results just in Hillcrest. So I thought, you know, maybe it's a good thing that this bubble has burst in terms of the schools and everything like that. But people told me that wasn't a very nice perspective. Hey, real quick, are you a practitioner who needs continuing education? Are you looking for something that's fun, convenient, and frankly, cheap to fulfill your continuing education requirements? Well, you're in luck. I just released the Daily Acupuncture Facts PDA course. This is a series of 50 short articles with fun facts about commonly used acupuncture points. Each one is full of fun illustrations, useful diagrams, and some really bad puns. So it's a nice, not boring way to get your continuing education. If you want to go through it at a leisurely pace, you can sign up for the emails and get one email per day. Or if you're in a hurry, you can log into the course webpage and read them all at once and get your certificate right away. This course has been approved by the NCCOM for 10 PDA points. Sorry, this has not yet been approved for California CEUs. But if you're not in California, it's 10 PDA points for $50. So it's some of the cheapest and funnest continuing education around. So there's a link in the description or in the show notes. So click on that to sign up for the Daily Acupuncture Facts PDA course and get your continuing education done in a fun and convenient way. Now, back to the conversation with Chen. So that's good. I think that means we don't have to be too pessimistic that our industry is collapsing. Another thing people have been worrying about is the rise of dry needling and how many other physical therapists, chiropractors, everyone's getting into dry needling, and how that's, one, just destroying the profession, but it also might create more competition with other practitioners. I think you also work with chiropractors and other healthcare practitioners. How do you read this? Do we really need to worry about dry needling as competition to our profession?
That's such a great question, because I feel like as a whole, as an acupuncture profession, from what I've heard from acupuncturists who shared their perspectives with me, also we have clients who are on like the state board of acupuncture associations. And what I have noticed is the overall take of the profession, from my observations, is that, you know, dry needling, we definitely don't like, we want to be against that for other professions to be able to dry needle, right? And so what I feel about this is that, one, there are pros and cons to it. Like, to have dry needling available, it actually does make it more, in terms of accessibility, for situations where people may not even have thought about it, and they actually know, oh wow, this can be supportive of my health. And so it opens up the eyes of people, the lay public, to how this could be an option. So it's almost like opening the door to, wow, this, you know, people didn't even know about this before, right? So that can actually be of a benefit. I think the problem is this. The problem is that many people are not educated about the difference between dry needling and acupuncture. And so they might end up like just having it kind of muddled with understanding of that. And so that's the problem. Like if acupuncturists are able to, you know, if we're able to actually educate the public more about how much better like real acupuncture is, and when, in what cases it's going to be great for, and how dry needling is just like one little aspect of things, then like there's enough to go around, because there's so many people who need help with all kinds of different health issues, whether it's with pain or other kinds of health issues. And so I think rather than look at it at just as like, I think, of course, depending on your philosophy, you know, if you feel like it is really important for acupuncture to set those parameters from a legislative perspective to really protect the practice and scope of practice, I totally understand that. And then at the same time, if it doesn't end up going the way that overall we'd like it to go, where there are PTs or chiropractors who do end up having those privileges, then let's see how we can actually educate the public so that they just understand, you know, well, yeah, it's acupuncture is still going to be much, you know, more helpful for XYZ situation. So
yeah, because I think there is maybe an ethical side to it of sort of laws and regulations and making sure that people have the proper qualifications, that if there's more needle accidents because people are not getting proper qualifications, there's that whole aspect. I guess right now I'm just thinking more of a business aspect in terms of are they stealing our business? Are these unqualified mm-hmm. people coming in and stealing our business?
Right.
And I feel like I've seen a couple different ways people are going about this. I've seen some acupuncturists who actually advertise that they do dry needling. So they'll like put on their advertisements dry needling and then in order to get people in. I've seen other people go the other way and educate about the differences. And I guess, have you seen what's the most successful route? Or if you did want to educate people, how do you go about doing that? Is that something – I've seen people post things on Facebook about, oh, these are the differences between dry needling. This is the differences in training. Does stuff like that work?
Mm-hmm. I think that's really the best way, because otherwise people won't understand, right? And I think it's on some levels it's kind of like educating people, for example, nurses versus nurse practitioners or nurse practitioners versus doctors, like or PAs, like they're kind of fuzzy about that too, right? So then it's just it's a matter of how can we like consistently educate mm-hmm. the public so they are so clear about the distinction that like just because you're getting dry needling, it's not like just, you know, it doesn't come from that perspective of the clinical depth that an acupuncturist would with the level of training that they have. And so in terms of how, like you said, you know, how some people end up, even acupuncturists advertises, oh, we do dry needling. And so that's like an example of where they are noticing, well, maybe people are now understanding that dry needling is an option, and they're using that as a way to invite people in. But then when they come in, then that's a great opportunity to educate them on, well, this is what like a trained acupuncturist and also further like acupuncture and TCM could really help so much more than just dry needling. So yeah, I think it could work both ways, whether it's that situation or just making it really clear that, like, you know, when you come to us, we this is like acupuncture, like dry needling.
Yeah, and I guess kind of on the whole topic, I kind of have two minds about this, because on the one hand, I feel like if you're in business, you don't really need to focus on competition. You need to focus on what do I offer and what's my unique value perspective and what can I give the patient. But on the other hand, I sometimes make this analogy where it's like, Uber came in and basically created an unlicensed taxi service, and they kind of decimated the taxi industry. And so I'm kind of a two minds about this, about how this could affect just the business dynamics of the practice.
Yes, it's true. And I feel like I'm on the fence either way about it, you know, because of the exact reasons what you're saying. Like it's there in terms of really protecting the scope of practice, then it's really helpful to be very like, okay, here's the boundaries, and then don't even start to cross the boundaries, right? But then in terms of the overall accessibility concept, and then also like, you know, truly just in certain areas there are as much accessibility to acupuncturists, and then maybe there are other professions there who get trained on it. I think it is a tricky topic, and I think it's one of those things that as it has proven to be so far, it doesn't seem like it's going to be in the direction where like we just protect the scope of practice and that's that, because it's gone outside those bounds, you know, in different states and things already. So then the question becomes like, how can we really help educate the public so that they really understand the difference? And then how do we still continue to protect the scope of practice? Because I think the encroachment, I guess you can call it encroachment, it's like it's already happening. So I think I speak from that kind of a take of how like that's the reality of what we're seeing. And so let's see how we can be successful with either reality, whether it's like full scope of practice, only acupuncturist or like the dry needling already there. And then how do we still manage to end up being helpful to the public in the best way possible. And they understand the difference.
Yeah, and I guess maybe this next question kind of ties into this because I wanted to ask about the difference between being a generalist versus a specialist. And I think this can maybe tie in because if you have a specialty, it's kind of like Chinese medicine can treat things that dry needling can't. So if you take more the direction of being a specialist and you say I'm a fertility expert, then it's like there's really no dry needling for fertility. So that's another way to make this education, educating the patient and making a differentiation is by focusing on a specialty that dry needling can't address. But anyway, the actual question is about this difference between being a general practitioner and a specialist, because when I first got out of school, I was very much a general practitioner, and I was very upfront about that. When people, like, even when I was a supervisor in the student clinic, they'd be like, "What's your specialty?" And I'd be like, "My specialty is Chinese medicine. Like, as long as you treat the pattern, you can treat anything." But this is something I've been talking to people about a lot lately, and even some of the people we've had on the podcast, like Patrick in Louisville, Kentucky, is just a general practitioner. None of them have a specialty. Or even Mark Brinson, he says like, oh, he's just the local witch doctor and people come to him when they have a problem. But I started talking to Patrick about this over Thanksgiving, and I feel like maybe when we started 10 or 15 years ago, it was possible to be a general practitioner, or at least – the kind of difference about those two examples is they're kind of in a small town where the word of mouth works different. The community is structured differently. So I feel like in a small town, you can get away with being a general practitioner. But in a big city like San Diego, LA, New York, you probably can't. And then we kind of talked about that a little bit more. And I think now I'm of the opinion that even that was 15 years ago, but even today, even if you're in a small town, being a general practitioner doesn't work. It's better to have a specialty and to target a specific demographic. I guess what's your take on that?
Yeah. So whenever you are able to really have a focus area or specialty that you end up getting known for, it makes it so much easier to attract patients, for one. Because most people don't end up like waking up and be like, oh, I just need to have this kind of modality today. Unless they're already they already do that, right? They already get acupuncture. They already know about the benefits of it. Like most people don't wake up and think that way. They wake up thinking like, oh, I've got this issue. What do I do about it? And so then the more that people are able to put the two and two together, then they'll come and see you. And so then what are the implications of this? Right. So by the way, also, it could make it easier. Like if you would love to be getting referrals from other providers, it makes it easier for them to actually think of situations to refer to you versus like, oh, just refer everybody and everybody who has pain. Well, they're not going to refer everybody who has pain. And, unfortunately, And so then, but here's the thing. It's not necessary that you have to like specialize per se, because you know you might feel like, oh, this is, I can't do that because that is a whole idea of Chinese medicine. You look at the person as a whole, and then maybe I do prefer to be treating people with different kinds of health issues, and I don't want to just see fertility patients all day or eye patients all day, you know? So then what I would recommend is that, like, if you don't want to specialize, that's totally okay. It's just a matter of choosing different kinds of health issues to highlight, whether it's on your website, like a few key kind of areas to really highlight, or in your marketing, you focus on one topic at a time to educate, and then be able to help people understand and put the two and two together, like, oh, I could come in for this thing, right? So I think that would be a nice happy medium for acupuncturists who, you know, who don't necessarily want to specialize, but make it easier to be attracting patients. Because otherwise, it's just when you start doing marketing for things, it, then you feel like you need to educate on a million different things, right? So it's much harder always that way.
Oh, yeah, no, that sounds like it's like you're targeting a different niche one at a time. Because, yeah, because that's something that, like, when I first started, I was doing massage. And I feel like massage is a thing that everybody knows what it is, and it's very easy. So you just say, I'm a massage therapist, and people are like, oh, yeah, I'd really love to have a massage. But when you say, I'm an acupuncturist, people, like, not enough people know what that means. Like, nobody goes to Google and types in – I mean, I guess not a lot of people go to Google and type in – where is acupuncture? Where do I get acupuncture? It's more like, I have back pain. Where do I go to get rid of my back pain or things like that? Mm-hmm. But I guess, like, another thing is, if I remember correctly, I think one of your main ways for lead generation or for getting new patients is doing talks and things like that. So I feel like that could even apply to if you're doing talks. It was like, I've known a lot of people who try to do talks about acupuncture, and they start getting up there and it's like, well, acupuncture started 2,000 years ago. These are the 39 conditions that are recognized by the WHO, and they start getting into that. And I just kind of feel like I'm not sure a lot of people would want to take time out of their day to go to that kind of presentation. But if you had something where you're like, do you have painful periods every month? Here, come see this presentation where we go over five ways that can help with your painful periods. And, oh, by the way, acupuncture is really good for this. That's like a much more targeted thing. And then it sounds like you're saying we can just hop from topic to topic to start attracting a variety of people.
Yes, it's so much easier that way and more effective for sure. Mm-hmm. And then, like, educating people about different so you're progressively educating people about what acupuncture can really help with. Mm-hmm. So,
okay, great. So I think we've gone through a lot of things about, like, what's the state of the market today. We can still be optimistic, even though all the schools are closing. We still have good demand from the patient side, so we can still be optimistic about that. Dry needling isn't going to destroy our profession and take everything away from us. We kind of have this pre-question about if you're starting to go into practice, should you be a generalist or a specialist? And so it sounds like maybe just even choosing a few topics and focusing on one at a time can be a good way to bring in patients. But after that, we're in practice. We have our practice started. You have some – what are the different stages of practice and what can we focus on in each of those stages?
So in terms of stages of practice, I often think about it in stages of as it relates to income, like revenue-wise. And the reason for that is, like, the stage of practice, it's what gets you, for example, to $100,000 is a little bit different than – what gets you to 250, and then 250 to half a million is also a little bit different. And then half a million to million, like, is another, like, key milestone to cross as well. It's like that, right? So I kind of look at it in terms of those stages.
Yeah. So is that different than looking in terms of, like, patient? I know a lot of people measure by patient count. Is that different from measuring to, like, oh, I have 10 patients a week and now I have 20 patients a week and now I have 50 patients a week?
Yeah, because I feel like there are different kinds of, like, ideals for everybody that's different about what it means to have a successful practice. And for some people, they would love to be busy and seeing, you know, a lot of patients every single day, you know, 20 a day, even some. And then some would think 20 a week is way too many. And so so then I think it's really a matter of having a practice that really aligns with your energy flow and then also with your own aspirations for what you feel like, how you would love to be a part of changing our healthcare system through acupuncture, right? And also what lines up for your lifestyle desires too. And so it's like the balance of that. And so what I find it easier to look at is more stages of practice as it relates to things financially, because there are different kinds of structures that tend to be in place at that each stage of growth financially. And so, for example, in the earlier stages, when growing to, like, your first six figures, one of the I would say one of the biggest mistakes a lot of practitioners make and acupuncturists make is is focusing on the wrong things, and whether it's in the stage of practice or just overall timing of things, it may not be the most optimal. So one mistake I often see, for example, fresh out of school, is like, yay, I'm here now. Okay, so let me see how I'm going to get the word out. Maybe I will do some, like get my website up, and then I get the website up and it's like, wait, I thought when I got my website up, all these people be calling me. Oh, wait, they're not calling me. So maybe I should spend money on SEO because people have been calling me and saying they can help me with SEO. And then only to find that, wait, I have to keep spending money on this month after month for like at least 6 months or even longer until I actually see more of results from this. Wait, well, maybe I should run ads, or I should like get ads and be able to at least get the word out more, right? And then spending money on ads, and then realizing, wait, yes, I got the visibility, but I'm not seeing more patients necessarily from it. And part of the issue with that is, just as an example, with those strategies, because those aren't the end all be all strategies, but just even with some of those strategies that are tried, right? And also maybe there are other kinds of strategies that you might be trying when you're listening to this. It's like maybe you're trying to network and get people to actually understand more about what you do and also get to know you more. Or
dance
maybe
on TikTok.
Yes, maybe you're trying to do the social media thing because you've been hearing that can be really good and everyone's on social media. So you need to be on social media too. And then come to I know we had a conversation about this a little while ago, but I mean, it still stands to be true. And now as it was a few years ago, but even now more than before, where back in the day, you could post something on social media and then like on your, for example, Facebook business page or IG page, right? And then people would see it, like a large majority of the people who followed you would see it. But now there are statistics that are pretty low, where at times there might even be just like 5%, 3% who even see your post, you know? And so in order for it to be seen, you feel like you need to, well, not you feel like you need to be, I mean, you would need to be constantly posting. And then it's like for many of you, it's like you don't really want to be doing that all the time. You just want to see patients. And so those are like longer term plays typically. And then, or maybe you might be thinking, oh, I'll do some kind of event or be at some kind of a health fair or something where I'm going to have a lot of exposure. But so what I was going to say about this is that one of the biggest mistakes in the earlier stages of practice is focusing primarily on getting found instead of also clearly communicating your value. And so what can happen is then getting these visibility opportunities, but one, it might not even be in front of the right kind of audience. For example, when I help our clients with this, like one of the questions that I end up really, you know, asking or just thinking about is like, are you in front of, for example, if you're fishing for fish, would you rather fish out of a pond full of fish? Or would you rather fish out of a pond full of snakes, ducks, turtles, frogs, and fish, right? And so I feel like many times as acupuncturists are getting to open their practices, they're like, oh, let me just try this and that, and I'm going to get more visibility. Even if they do get the visibility, if you're not actually articulating your value in a way that really sets you apart and to the point where people put the two and two together and they feel like, I have to come see you, even if you are spending money on ads or trying to get SEO going or networking, that kind of thing, like it might not be that fruitful. And so that's where the disappointment ends up coming in. And so, I mean, have you noticed that too?
Yeah, and I was going to say, I feel like that's even the thing about social media when a lot of people try to focus on that. But I think that, like, if you run an online business, that's like social media can be a really good play. If you run a brick and mortar business, it's like social media goes worldwide. If you're in one location, it's like you might be in San Diego and your social media posts are going out to people in New York who are never going to come see you anyway. Mm-hmm. But in terms of communicating value, so I guess what are some strategies to communicate value in front of the people that would want to actually come see you?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think first and foremost, like really having clarity about what being able to get across what actually makes you different and sets you apart. So elements of weaving in aspects of like what is it that really has driven you to be so passionate about the work that you're doing? And having that also be shared in what you end up sharing with people in your marketing. So whether it comes from a personal experience of something that happened to you or something that happened to someone else, but it influenced you quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, being able to share those stories that can really help people feel something about your passion is really important. And then also having, like, do you have a stance? How do you feel about our healthcare system? How do you feel about how our current conventional healthcare system actually treats XYZ issues, right? Compared to how you would approach it, like what really sets it apart and what is your stance around that? And so, so it could be about a particular health issue or it could be about something else. For example, one of our clients who she actually had she was still working another job when she first came to us. And then in her first year with us, she ended up being able to go off completely on her own. She was so happy about that. And then she ended up working with us for 4 years. And by the end of the 4 years, like she actually had other practitioners who worked with her. And so she's grew quite a bit. And so one of the things that, as far as her stance, when we were working on that, so it didn't actually have to totally do with about our healthcare system, but it had to do with how her stance was that she feels like this country would be in a better place if there were more women in leadership roles, like higher up kind of leadership roles. And so she helps women with like hormone balancing and also like feeling like they're really at their peak, you know, performance. And so then, you know, she talks about how, you know, women, we tend to like put other people first and take care of other people first and before ourselves. And then we also, women tend to juggle more things than men typically do, mm-hmm. With families and things like that too. And so then putting them ourselves last more. And so then, but then we aren't able to be the leaders that we could really be. Right. And so then she ties that into the health side of things. So that's another example of aspects of what can set you apart. And I mean, there's several other aspects. And when we work with our clients through, we actually have a uniqueness factor magic workshop that really helps pull it out of them. And really, because it's not just about like having a knowingness about it. It's about being able to articulate it.
Yeah. To communicate it. Yeah.
Yeah. In a way that really sets you apart and lands for people. And then so in terms of the stages of practice that we were talking about, right? So that's the initial stage that I see in terms of what is important to focus on. So not only on being able to get found, but also being able to clearly articulate your value. And then when we go into the stages of where you are already making like 100K and then you would like to get to more like 250K or more, then it becomes about how can you be getting known more as a go-to acupuncture practice and clinic, and then also start to get certain things in place so that what you do can actually grow and without you having to always be reinventing the wheel or wearing so many different hats, because like at a certain point in time, you might feel like burnt out, right? And so I think that's becomes really important in that next stage of practice to the 250K level. And then in the 500,000 level, and by the way, also in the 250K level, like getting there too, then it's typical to be considering things like in terms of what to focus on, might be on how can I, because there's only so much time in the day and only one of you to go around. And that you're going to end up hitting a point where it's like you just can't see any more patients. You're trying to squeeze them in the schedule. And then either like you feel exhausted at the end of the day or your family doesn't see you very much. And they start like having, you know, wanting to see you more too. Yeah. And so then in that stage, it's like, how can we also, when you go on vacation, like what happens, you know, you really feel the income dip. Right. And so that's because it's everything's still tied to you. No matter how good you are at doing what you do and how fast you are, that's just going to end up being like the capacity. So then being able to have a way of having the practice help more people and make money without you having to be there. So whether it is through hiring help with other acupuncturists or people who could be other practitioners who see patients for you, not acupuncturists, but it could be other kinds of practitioners. It could be even health coaches or, you know, other kinds of support there. I mean, certainly at that stage, admin, hopefully you'll have some help there too, yeah, already at that point too. And that, or it could be adding in other income streams into the practice, whether it is to like being able to private label what you offer as herbs or supplements that could be supportive, or it could be income streams online. So, you know, have you ever felt like you say the same things over and over again to your patients? So what if you could actually put that together in something like an automated online course that people can purchase, right? So like we have clients who do that. And then one client of ours, she's like, oh, it's so great. I just get, you know, put it on my website, and then I ended up getting, even if it's like an extra $100, it's like an extra $100 that goes towards things that extra funds, whether it's for the kids or for myself, you know. So it's extra money that comes in. So, you know, looking at that, or some of our clients end up doing things like creatively where they would love to educate people and then also make money from it. So whether it is to offer like group experiences online or memberships, like an acupuncturist client of ours does like membership with her patients, but it's more of, you know, educating about the concepts of Chinese medicine and applying it to life. And so that's really like, she loves it. And then it's like an extra, whether it's extra $500 or extra $5,000 a month, like extra $10,000 a month into the practice or more. So that's like a great thing to look at in that stage of practice, like 100 to 250, right? And then going to half a million, then it becomes about how can you actually scale, and same thing with getting to a million, like how could we actually grow from a place that it's not like where we feel like it's double the responsibility, but rather from a place where it's like, this can grow and expand to help more people, and then be able to have the practice run more like a well-oiled machine, so that you could choose to be there if you want to, or you could choose to not be there. And then like people are taken care of, people are helped, and money's coming in too. So yeah, I mean, this is something that like we actually have a roadmap and also a checklist for like what to focus on in a six-figure stage of practice, like in terms of getting to six figures, and then being like, even if in the low six figures or in that frame of stage of practice, and then what to focus on if you would like to get to the seven-figure stage, and then like what are some key areas of focus, because what I find is that this is not typically systematically taught, and you know, but like it's one of those things that when you can actually understand and then also be able to find alignment for the approach that works best for what your aspirations are in this level of this season of life, and also this season of stage of practice, then like you can grow in a way that feels fulfilling, and it doesn't have to require like doing like working harder or trying to squeeze more people in. So yeah, so then getting to seven figures, there's a different set of things to pay attention to and a checklist too. So yeah, and then it's also really helpful to have guidance from a perspective where, because many times it's like, if you haven't been there before, then it can, you know, you don't really know what you don't know. And so being able to have guidance from a perspective of whether six or seven figures, like wherever you're wanting to go, that can be super helpful too. And yeah, I mean, when our clients come to us, that's one of the things that they really love, because we actually get to see the insides of so many different practices, like acupuncture practices and other kinds of practices, and what, like holistic practices, and what's working and what's not working behind the scenes, and then really giving the shortcut to, okay, this is working, and so focus on this. Like many times also, we have clients who end up having things work for them, and then we'll ask them, hey, are you open to us sharing it with our clients, other clients too. And if they give us permission, then, you know, then they also get to benefit from that too. So it's just so much faster to have guidance.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I think that's a big deal. I think of it like having a personal trainer, or like lately I've been like trying to grow on YouTube or grow an email list. And it's just one of those things where when you're new to it, it can be very overwhelming, but it's kind of like the path is actually very well trodden. And there's actually like there's a step-by-step method. You may not know about it, but there's a step-by-step method that other people have followed that can really get you there. And it's kind of like you can figure it out yourself, surely, but it might take 10 times longer. And it becomes a, how much do you value your time? So I think whether it's like with a personal trainer, it's worth getting the help. If you're trying to grow a business, it's worth getting the help. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I think you have another call to get to, which I really would have loved to dig into each one of these. I wanted to interrupt you about five times and really dig into some of the more tactical things about that. But if people want more information, do you have a resource they can go to?
Yeah, so you can go to introvertedvisionary.com. So if you would like the six-figure, like in terms of wanting to get to six figures and what to focus on there as far as a roadmap, or the checklist of what to focus on in that stage of practice. Because from having ushered our clients into multiple six figures and seven figures, there are just certain things that we've noticed is important to get in place in different stages of practice. So there's a checklist for wanting to get to six figures, and then there's a checklist for getting to seven figures, and also a roadmap of key areas of focus. And so if you would like that, then you can go to introvertedvisionary.com/67-fig-roadmap-checklist. And then this will be in the show notes, so you could click on the link.
Yeah, I'll put a link to that in the description.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then if you would love to, like if you feel like you're capable of so much more, or you feel like you're at a plateau in your practice and you would love help with and exploring growing your practice faster with guidance and help and being able to tap into six and seven figure growth systems that work well for other acupuncturists, then, you know, feel free to go to introvertedvisionary.com and book a free call with us, and more than happy to see how we can help you with growing your practice faster. And by the way, also at that link that I gave you earlier too, with the checklist, you'll have an opportunity to also book in with us if you wanted to as well. So it's being able to be successful in practice. It's not like I have to like throw things to see if it works kind of a thing. Like it can be easier with help and with guidance, and then also like knowing what to do, and also being able to tap into things that are already working too. So yeah.
All right, great. Chen Yin, thanks for being here.
Yes, good to be here today.
So if you want to download the 6 or 7 figure checklist, there's a link in the show notes or in the description of this podcast. And if you're a practitioner in need of continuing education, remember to check out the Daily Acupuncture Facts PDA course. There's a link to that in the show notes as well. This episode can be downloaded at podcast.tcmstudy.net/session26. Thanks for being here, and we'll see you next time.